This is Will's Band of the Week for May 13th, 2018. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with David from the New York City Bureau.
Checking in.
And I think the remote sound might be better than the local sound this week. We've had a mixer technical issue. We were talking before we started recording that we really should have a person in charge of this who just basically swoops in and fixes any problem. Kind of like a roadie, right? They should be running into the studio really fast and correcting everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, really, there should be a lot of people out there who want to be interns, you know, for Will's Band of the Week as a way of, you know, padding their resume so that they can get into the right college or whatever. So we should have someone like that, right?
You would think so. I mean, we wouldn't have to pay them, right? Just the putting that in your resume would be like, you know, working at the White House or something. Well, maybe better than working at the White House presently, but...
Right, like yeah. Working at the Obama White House.
A legitimate White House. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, boy, do we have a lot to talk about this week, don't we?
Yes, we do.
In fact, there was concern.
Good and bad.
There was concern that this podcast would take an inordinately long time to record. But because Barrett became unavailable and then Anurag became unavailable, now there are only two of us. So at least maybe it'll be a little shorter, right?
True. And for any listeners out there who feel that it's too long, you know, there's always the option of listening to a podcast at 1.5 speed. I mean, not the music, of course, but
right.
The talking, which
right.
would, you know, save time.
That's
I've actually
right.
listened to a few podcasts at 1.5.
You know what's funny is, have you ever listened to a podcast just for fun at slow speed?
No, haven't. I know what it sounds like because I hit that button by mistake.
Yeah, no, I haven't done it on purpose, like, but I've just experimented probably like you have. And it sounds very funny, right? It sounds like the person's under a really strong sedative or something
right,
when they're
right.
talking. So if you want to make us sound foolish, go ahead and do that. Not that we don't already sound foolish, but,
right.
you know.
But I know of people who read a lot of audio, at least one person who reads a lot of audio books, listens to a lot of audio books,
uh-huh.
and actually goes at, I'm not sure what speed he uses, if it's 1.5 or even higher than 1.5, mm-hmm. but actually saves time by... listening at speed.
That would save...
I don't think I could do that, but...
Right. It would save time, but man, it seems like it would take a lot of concentration to keep up with it, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, well, you and I each have a live report, and you sent me one last week,
yes.
but it didn't make it to press time. You know, we have some pretty strict deadlines here, and if you don't make deadline, then it's just gone, you know? And,
yes, I foolishly sent it in a leisurely manner when I should have realized that, you know... I was up against it.
Of course, I didn't tell you what the deadline was because we never know what it's going to be from week to week.
Right, but I should have sent it in as... I should have left the concert, gotten on the subway, and basically recorded it right then and sent it in. But
right.
I didn't.
That'd be kind of cool with subway background.
Maybe next time.
Like when Chris and Barrett were on the podcast from their car driving to Nashville. Some good car noise there. So... should we play your pre-recorded live report, or do you want to give it, like, in the present, right now?
I think it's good and succinct the way it's recorded, so instead of wasting time with, you know, going on and on, I think the recording is good. So.
Plus, what if you gave, if you did it now, and then you didn't feel like it lived up to the standard of when you did it before? That'd be sad, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's play it. Here it is.
Hi, David here with a last-minute live report. From Soccer Mommy at Rough Trade Records in Brooklyn on Friday night. Let me just say that there's nothing quite like a venue so intimate that you can lean on the back wall, or rather the wall just in front of the sound guy, which is just in front of the back wall, and still have a great view of the stage. This show was supposedly sold out, or nearly sold out, but it wasn't so packed that it was uncomfortable. In fact, there was nice room in between the people. And I had Son of David supplying me with rum and cokes to ease my still somewhat raw throat. So I can say that all was right with the world. And given all that, the only thing that could really wreck the evening would be two wretched bands that we had to endure before Soccer Mommy came on. In fact, we had the Mellow Longbeard, and then we had Gobin Jr., that's G-O-B-B-I-N-J-R, who I thought were quite good, kind of reminiscent of Frankie Kosmos or Charlie Bliss, maybe. Very personable, very energetic, and they've mastered the art of ending a song in 2.5 to 3 to 3.5 minutes before you've gotten tired of it, which is an art I really appreciate. Now, Sophie of Soccer Mommy was everything that we had anticipated and maybe a little bit more, and the only complaint either of us, I think, could have had was that it was a pretty short set, less than an hour, and the band could have made up for it by giving us a decent encore, but in this case, I think due to venue rules, which needed this concert to end at midnight, they gave us a precisely one-song encore. Now, the song happened to be Outworn, which is from the previous album, to the one that is just out, and it's a great song, and it was a great performance, so I don't think anyone left complaining. I know very few. There was no disappointment. But I have to say that a one-song encore is kind of on the cheesy side. So, Rough Trade, if you can, loosen up and let these bands stretch out a little bit more, at least the headliner. Anyway, I don't think there's anything better than a great band with great energy and a really great approach to the audience, a respectful audience, an intimate venue. I mean, everything was great. I believe Soccer Mommy is hitting Madison in July, so look for them. That is all for now.
All right.
Yes, I can't disagree with that.
Seems like you would agree with that. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, that's pretty good support from Son of David, you know, to bring you rum and cokes. That's cool. What a guy.
Well, actually, they were his rum and cokes, but he allowed me to share them, so that's the important thing.
Oh, that's even better. Self-sacrifice. And I was going to comment on the encore thing. It seems like it's become more common for bands to not even play encores. Now, maybe that's because they come to Madison and sometimes they have a smaller crowd or far less than capacity. So they don't want to go off the stage and then have people clap and it sounds like a golf course or something and there's like 8 people clapping and then they come back on. So instead of doing that, sometimes they'll just have a, you know, predetermined set and just play it. And there's kind of no expectation of an encore. That seems to be more common these days. So maybe in New York you've got, you know, usually got a bigger crowd or a, you know, a packed venue. So then that makes it more amenable to the traditional encore.
Yeah, I haven't actually experienced that yet, but I would say that Son of David, Gabriel, indicated that Julian Baker did not do an encore, and that was a packed house in Jersey City. So He's experienced that, and I don't know, maybe that's the coming thing. Yeah. On the other hand, our friends at Guided by Voices played that same venue recently, and I looked it up just to see how many songs they played, because it's always amazing how many songs they played.
Like 50 or something.
And it was probably, I think it was 50. It was in the 40s or 50s, I don't remember. But get this, they did a 10-song encore.
Yeah, I have not seen them in, I don't know, like over a decade, but I think what they did was they have a pre-packaged set of songs, and it's basically, it's 2 encores, but it's like 5 songs for each one, and they just, you know, rattle them off.
Yeah, I don't know if there was actually a gap in there where they went away and came back again.
Yeah.
But in any case, after the regular set, there were 10 songs. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm ready to see them again live. So I think they came to Madison about 2 years ago, and I was out of town. And they're not scheduled to come back to Madison right now. So, but I'm ready for another Guided by Voices gig. I think it'd be fun. So, all right, I've got a live report. I was you might have seen me gushing about Peter Hook and the Light. That's who I saw.
Yes.
And Peter Hook, of course, is the bass player from Joy Division and New Order, and he doesn't get along with the New Order people anymore. This has been ongoing for like a decade now, I think. So he at some point just decided, well, I'm going to form my own band and I'm going to play these songs whenever I feel like it. So his band is called Peter Hook and the Light. I believe his son has played with him on a lot of his gigs, but on this one, I think his son, oh, there's some other band that his son got invited to tour with. I'm forgetting who that is now. But so he was unavailable, but they had he had an excellent band. And this was just really cool because I had never seen any of these songs ever performed live. Although, well, that's actually wrong. I did see New Order live in like 1987. But this was just really cool. So what he did, this was on this tour, he was playing the Substance albums. There's a Joy Division Substance and a New Order Substance, and they're both sort of singles collections. And so he did a set of New Order followed by a set of Joy Division. And I just thought it was great. His band is really good. And, you know, he's the bass player. He doesn't call himself New Order or Joy Division. You know, he's got his own band name, but he owns the songs with all those other guys. So, you know, they're his songs too. And he sings most of them, which is very interesting to me because he was never the singer in Joy Division.
Right. That must be completely different.
Right. In neither of the bands, he didn't do any of the vocals. And, his voice is much more in the register of Ian Curtis than it is Bernard Sumner. So he's more in that right register with the Joy Division songs. Does not have the charismatic voice or presence of Ian Curtis, and he doesn't have the actual vocal abilities that Sumner has. So, but it's just cool to just see him do it. He's just like, I'm just going to do it. It was great. I was just so glad that I saw it, and it was really cool. And I liked it enough that I decided to queue up a song. And there are a couple of live recordings from Peter Hook and the Light that you can get on the streaming services. This one goes all the way back to 2011, where they recorded a show in, I think, somewhere in Australia, probably down the block from Nicholas, I would imagine. This is Peter Hook and the Light playing the Joy Division song Transmission.
Band sounds great.
Yeah, and that's from 7 years ago, and so they're still sounding just really great. Sound system was good. Everything was just great. It was a great overall experience. Also, as I was waiting for the band to come on, about 15 minutes before they came on, I sent out a tweet that said, "This is one for the aging rockers." And then I did how the Twitter people do the hashtag thing. I did a hashtag thing. Hashtag, yep. Peter Hook. And then Peter Hook liked it. So he's like backstage reading my tweet. Isn't that cool?
That is so cool.
It's very exciting. Unless it was his management, somewhere in the UK handling his Twitter account. But I get the idea that he does his own Twitter account. He posts his set lists from his shows on Twitter. So
yeah, it's probably a one-man operation.
Yeah.
Well, I have to inform the listeners that I actually have a better Twitter story. which was that I complained, I tweeted to Snail Mail and Liz Fair to complain that, you know, why did you do this to me, scheduling your only Brooklyn shows of the year on the same day, which is June 7th, and not thinking that, you know, I would actually get a reply, but just sort of tweak them.
Yeah.
And I got a reply from Liz Fair saying, I'm going to try and make it to the end of Snail Mail. I had read an article about the two of them. They had a little interview together, so I knew they were acquainted. And she was like, well, I'll try and make it to her show, you know. Maybe I can jump in at the end or something like that, which I don't understand, because they're on at the same time in the same borough on the same day. So how is that possible?
But it would be tough, it seems like, yeah.
Yep. So there you go.
How about
you got retweeted by Peter Hook, and I got retweeted by Liz Fair.
That's pretty good. I was going to say, do you think maybe there's a private helicopter that can take her from the roof of the building that she's playing in like 5 minutes to the roof of the building that Snail Mail is playing?
Maybe, or maybe they just, you know, close the streets and, you know, give her a
car. Yeah, they could do that.
I don't know.
That would make sense, yeah.
It is Williamsburg, so, you know, she would be Williamsburg royalty, I guess.
Seems like it, yeah. All right, let's see. I have to go back to the agenda, because we have to follow a strict agenda. All right, yep. I guess we got to talk about the thing that we have to talk about, don't we?
Yes.
This one's too sad for the jingle. Scott Hutchison from Frightened Rabbit took his own life this past week. There was a lot in the indie rock media, I guess all over Twitter and everywhere, right? And so there was so much written that, I don't know, people who followed Frightened Rabbit probably know everything already that we're going to say, right? But man, oh man, what just a terrible, sad story. You know, I guess one of my reactions was that the artists often talk about how they write songs that are very personal to them, and it's, you know, it's so personal, and they go out on stage and they're, you know, spilling their guts and, you know, and how vulnerable they feel and all that. And I think from a, I don't know, part of it is that I'm not a student of lyrics as much, but I know a depressing lyric when I hear it, you know, but I think there's a tendency to kind of brush that off as, you know, well, this is art, this is a performance. Like, he doesn't really feel that way, you know? And some of his lyrics were so dark that you just didn't want to think that he could believe or that he could actually feel that way. Or you'd, like, think that it's, like, fleeting, which I, to some extent, I'm sure it was. But, you know,
Or you feel that it's, that there's real anguish there, but that it's being worked out somehow in the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yet somehow putting it into this music is working it out. And in fact, I read somewhere that he, you know, there was a song of his where the last line is something like, you know, about not killing yourself today or this year or whatever.
Right.
And that in fact, there was a point where the audience was screaming that line back at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a life-affirming line. But on the other hand, when you think about it more, you know, in depth, what he was saying was, I do want to kill myself. I'm just not doing it yet. But the fact is, you know, that thought was there, and he was headed in that direction, if only people had been aware of it. So
yeah, and that song in particular, that where he made that reference, was just eerily predictive of what ended up happening. And it was a song from 10 years ago called Floating in the Fourth, and the Fourth is the river where he presumably was found. So it's just terrible. It's like, well, after 10 years, he acted on what he had written 10 years ago. So I thought we should definitely play a song. So the one that I chose, which again, I think it's kind of painful to listen to in retrospect when you think about it, but it was a great song, I thought. It's from the 2008 album, The Midnight Organ Fight, and the song is called The Modern Leper.
Walks amongst you, all you tired human beings. He's got all the things a cripple has not, two working arms and legs. and vital parts fall from his system and dissolve in Scottish rain. Vitally, he doesn't miss him. He's too fucked up to care. Was that you?
There you go.
I just have a question whether all Scottish bands are sort of, or Scottish bands are more overwrought emotionally than non-Scottish bands.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Twilight Sad.
Right, right.
Frightened Rabbit. My favorites, There Will Be Fireworks. I'm still waiting for their third album. They're all very intense.
Yes. And then there was We Were Promised Jetpacks.
Them too.
Yep. Yeah, it's like a category unto itself. But there's an overlap with the Irish, some of the Irish bands too, don't you think? Like that song has like this Irish stomp kind of sound to it, which is kind of bouncy, but then it's, you know, it's so dark and sad too. It's a tough one. All right. Well,
so tough that we can't even play the jingle because it's
right.
Not amusing in the least.
I think there's an age requirement for the jingle. Like, you got to at least be like maybe over 60 and not have a real tragic method of. I mean, like I can't really see myself playing the jingle on a suicide ever. But there's a fine line with the jingle. We had a listener who got really mad because when we talked about Tom Petty played the jingle, came after Barrett specifically.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think that was more about the comments, though, than the jingle, right?
Probably. Yeah, I think you're right. But then he went off on the whole Death of the Week concept and thought it was all in terrible taste. So, yep. All right. Anyway, I hope the Frightened Rabbit people can get through this and maybe have some more music in their careers. One of the band members is his brother, Grant Hutchison. And, anyway, there was a lot of good stuff written, so if you're interested, there was a really good article in The Guardian. They were all over the place. So there's plenty to read about it if you want to. So, all right, let's move on. And to lighten the mood a little bit, we have this.
1, 2, 3, 4.
It's time for the
Mailbag!
In the mailbag this week, Jeff Arthur sent us on Twitter an article about Sloan, who we just talked about. And Sloan, one of the guys from Sloan, a guy named Jay Ferguson, he did this interview or I don't know if it's an interview or how, what you characterize it as, but it's a series called Rate My Records, I think, something like that. Rank Your Records, that's what it's called. And so they have an artist rank their own catalog. So at that time, this was before the latest Sloan album, so I think there were 11 albums, and he ranked them. And his favorite is called One Chord to Another from 1996. So that's an interesting exercise when you think about it, because you could, you know, you have to, some album has to be last, right? So you have to kind of, you don't, I don't know if you have to trash your own album, but you have to say why it's your least favorite, right?
That's true.
So if an artist with a huge ego wouldn't be able to do it because they'd be saying, like, you know, all of my albums are brilliant, right?
Right.
Like if you had Gene Simmons, like if you had Gene Simmons rate the Kiss albums, right? He'd be saying how great they all are.
Well, once you got to the bottom, you could say things like, you know, the producer really messed this up. This would have been a great album, except, you know, I was fighting with the bass player at the time, and so he screwed up. Or, you know what I mean? You could, you could
just blame somebody else.
You could come up with something.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. So this is from the album that they ranked number one, that he ranked number one, the opening
track. Straight from the source. Now we know.
Yep, here it is. The Good in Everyone.
Would you please welcome to the stage
So that's the opening track from the Sloan album, One Chord to Another, called The Good in Everyone. You know what's funny about that? They start it with that crowd thing, and it's like, okay, the guy is fantasizing that he's in the Beatles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the crowd's going crazy, and then they have a song that sounds like, well, like the hand claps make it sound like, I want to hold your hand, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty fun, though. Listening to Sloan recently doesn't make me want to go back and listen to more Sloan. There's a lot of Sloan to be listened to, though. I don't think I'll have time to listen to 12 albums.
Right.
But
I wonder who else is on that Rate My Records.
Well, funny that
schedule there.
Funny that you mentioned that, because when I was reading this article, I found a link, and there was actually a Scott Hutchison one from just like recently, and it was one of the articles that was quoted of him talking about his own music, and that's another one of the good reads. Very somewhat disturbing and sad read, but a very good one. So yeah, the site is called Noisy. I think it might be a Canadian site, but anyway, that's where this series Rank Your Records is, so you can find it there. It's cool. All right, if we covered the preliminaries, is it time for music proper?
Yeah.
There's a band called Fourth Wanderers, and they were actually featured on a Grant's Underground maybe 2 years ago. So Grant was on to these people a long time ago. But now they're hitting the big time. So, well, it probably was because of being featured here that they're now on Sub Pop. So,
wow, so they've emerged from the underground into the light.
Yeah, I mean, Sub Pop is Sub Pop's definitely above ground, right?
Definitely.
So I'm picturing like how they would have gotten signed to Sub Pop. Do you think they're playing a gig and some guy wearing a suit coat but no tie and jeans was at the gig watching them intently, and it turned out that was the guy from Sub Pop?
That's the way it usually happens, isn't it?
So I was thinking, yeah. So anyway.
Either that or that guy was listening to the podcast. because he follows Grant, and he basically just wants to know one thing, which is, what does Grant think?
It could be
that
they just
found out that, you know, Grant was positive, and so...
Yeah.
It was only a matter of time.
They might have just been signed just right on the spot just from that, you know?
Well, I think they like to leave a certain amount of time in between so as not to make it look too obvious.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, then Grant would want a piece of the action, and you know they don't want to do that.
Right, so. The referral fee.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good
point.
So
they just follow him at a distance and, like, you know, make notes.
Yeah, so there are two...
Kind of like the way they do with us, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff goes on behind the scenes. You know, we can't really disclose all the, you know, some of this. It's pretty exciting stuff, though. So, Fourth Wanderers, two main songwriting members who met in high school in Montclair, New Jersey, which I've heard of, but I don't know where that is.
Sounds like somebody has been doing their music journalism. Somebody other than me, that is.
I did this music journalism. Do you know where Montclair, New Jersey is?
I do indeed. In fact, I was at a concert there, well, this was already like 2 years ago. Went to see Emperor X, my favorite, and one of my favorites. And actually, Longbeard, who I just was mentioning, opened for Soccer Mommy. Mm-hmm. They were at that concert in Montclair. So
a lot of things are being tied in together here.
It's a sleepy little suburb, but they have some... there's another band from... I can't think of the name right now, but there's another... hot band from Montclair. Actually, there's probably more than one other one. But
Well, so they've since moved. So now one of them lives in Ohio and the other in New York. And they have three other band members. I don't know where they're from. So they made it a real band. When you get signed to Sub Pop, you get to be a real band, right?
Right.
So, and I think this is a good album. It's, you know, it's kind of quirky indie pop stuff. But I think pretty good quality throughout. So I will start... Let's go with number 5 called Not For Me.
Okay, so the other Montclair band I was thinking of was Pine Grove.
You know, I've never listened to Pine Grove, but I was reading, was it last year they had an album that made a whole bunch of people's end-of-year lists?
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe I should listen
like
to
them. They're like a critic's darling. I mean, they're not bad. I'm not crazy about them, but, you know, they're not bad.
All right, Montclair.
Kind of like another band that I appreciate actually a little more, which is Whitney. I don't know if we've discussed them at all.
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah,
they're closer to you. I think they're a Chicago band.
I think Whitney, I think Barrett nominated them, and we talked about them. Yeah.
Okay, it just took us right off the track. Anyway, we were talking about Fourth Wanderers.
We were. Yep, self-titled, Sub Pop. So, did you get a chance to listen to this? At least 50 times.
And,
right?
Sorry?
The assignment was to listen at least 50 times, I think, right? To do proper evaluation.
Yeah, I think I only did like 40, 45 or 46. I'm not sure.
That's pretty close.
So, yeah, it's a problem. No, I didn't have a huge amount of time. But if I have to pick a track, you know, there's a... The thing about picking a track is I will pick a track, but there's a certain, I don't want to say, there are no songs to me on this record that stand out as, oh yeah, yeah, that's the one, you know what I mean?
Right, yep.
There aren't any that sound, you know, terrible, but it's kind of, you know, all in the same place.
Right, me. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But Temporary is a good song.
Fourth Wanderers. Yeah, I agree with you that, you know, there's a certain sameness to the songs. I think where I came from on it was that you have to decide whether you like the vibe. And then if you do, then you can discover more intricacies and differences in the songs. And I got to the point where I liked the vibe, so I pretty much liked the whole thing. So I've got another...
Yeah, it's kind of blazing guitars, that voice, and some... Very intense drumming is the formula, and they just repeat.
Yeah, and there's a guitar style, and there's a vocal style, and they all fall into that general thing. Well, I've got one more. Let's play New Face.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Fourth Wanderers.
Mm-hmm. Up from the underground.
Yep. They graduated. So there's a taste for you. I'm recommending them. Montclair, New Jersey's finest. Or maybe not, but close to the finest. Right?
Yes.
All right. Well, should we move on to the indie rock veterans?
Yes.
We like to feature indie rock veterans on this podcast. So it's like you have a little bit of an advantage if you're an indie rock veteran or aging rocker. I think we, you know, if that's our bias, I think that's okay. So so when a Belly album came out, it was kind of logical that we would talk about it, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Their third album, the first two were in, was it 1994 and 1995, I think?
Right, right.
And
here comes the third one, right on schedule, 23 years later.
Actually, Star came out in 1993, and then King in 1995, and now Dove in 2018. So
they're sticking to the one word formula.
Yep. I'm pretty sure that I saw them live in around 1995.
Did you?
Yep. I'm 98% sure. But it was 23 years ago, so it could be that my memory failed me. But yeah. Yeah, so I was a fan because I loved Throwing Muses, and Tanya Donnelly, who's the lead person in Belly, was sort of the co-lead person in Throwing Muses along with her half-sister, Kristen Hirsch.
So, right. Her mother married Kristen Hirsch's father, something like that, yes. Or vice versa, whatever.
Right. So, you know, in...
They were friends in, like, elementary school and then became... Half-sisters. I mean, that must have been strange.
Yeah. But anyway. Wow. Yeah.
They remained friends and then musical partners.
Yeah. And I've never heard, I don't know, did they have a falling out or are they still fine? They just separated musically. I'm not even sure. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened with that one.
But Kristen Hirsch.
She moved on. First, she moved on to the Breeders. Don't forget.
Well, I did forget. And then I realized it when I was reading about it. And that's why Anurag really should have been on this podcast, right? Because there's a Breeders tie-in. But I think in Throwing Muses, Kristen Hirsch was more of the really quirky, off-kilter kind of songwriter, and then Tanya Donnelly wrote the more straightforward, catchier, poppier tunes, maybe. Mm-hmm. Would that be a fair characterization?
I never really followed Throwing Muses enough to know. Sorry.
Chris would have an opinion. I think Chris was a big fan of Throwing Muses. But mm-hmm. I just remember that was the... they were one of the rare U.S. bands on 4AD records. And so that just made them immediately cool. I just remember thinking how cool that first album of theirs was. So anyway, back to Belly.
Well, but first we have to say that, you know, it's interesting. She goes to the Breeders. The Breeders then, shortly after, cease to be a band. And then they're back in 2018 with an album, too. Right?
Oh, right, right. Yeah, very interesting. Right.
So
it's anyway. Like the comeback of the aging rockers. This is a pattern for this year, right?
Right, with that big gap in there. So my understanding is after she left the Breeders, she wanted to do the songs that she was working on as a solo project, then decided, no, I need a band, found these two guys, brothers, actually, there's a theme, another set of brothers, and that formed the nucleus of Belly, and they did two albums, and then they broke up.
Yeah, and then I guess there was some Tanya Donnelly solo stuff, but I didn't really pay attention to it, and I don't think it was very you know, widely distributed or anything. So I guess.
And then they came back in a couple of years ago, and I think I was aware of that, but I was kind of thinking, well, is this really a good idea? I mean, like they were great, and they had basically two perfect records, you know, 20 years ago. Like, why is this going to work out now? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason for this to happen, or is it better left with those two perfect records and, you know, let's just enjoy them for what they are, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, well, you know, they have this whole new album, so we really should take a look, right?
Yep. Yeah, there have been so many things coming out that they weren't at the top of my list of things to listen to. They're just kind of out there. But then upon your recommendation, I gave them attention. So, well, why don't you start with picking the first track?
Yeah. Hard to know which one. Why don't we try Heartstrings?
In the morning, I'll be gone. No, of course, I'll be here. I wake everybody up. Wind the clocks, oil the gears. Heartstrings come ring with hinges and springs. You gotta hold them down. Heartstrings. We've done the therapies and we've taken the cures, and all attempts at church have left us dizzy from the search, which leaves us no comfort but each other. Heartstrings come ring with horns and wings. You gotta lift them up. Heartstrings. Slice of life, slice too thin. Where to stop, where to begin? Slice of life, slice to pieces. Where to laugh, where to weep in? Leave a light, leave it on. I am ready to be gone and to stay, always to stay.
That's Belly. And I'm sensing a pattern now. You know what that is?
No.
Well, if you don't count, there's a bonus track after this song. But if you count this as the last song on the album, you have a pattern now. If you have been picking the last song on the album very commonly. So just thought I'd note that.
Okay. I was totally unaware.
We all have our patterns. Yeah. Now maybe you won't pick the last track now, the next, you know, 20 times you pick a track.
No,
but yeah, Belly, I'm glad you got me to listen to this. It's you know, it has definitely you know, a 90s rock pop kind of vibe, but I think that's, you know, that's good. That's sort of the general zone that they always were in, right? So it's not a departure, but I don't think they embarrassed themselves with the comeback. Do you?
No, absolutely not. You know, it feels folkier. Almost country sometimes.
Yeah, a few of the tracks.
Yeah, you were going to say.
Well, I was just saying that, yes, I agree, a few of the tracks have a little bit of that country-ish thing. And, yeah, it's folkier than I expected. They have, like, the first Belly song that I really liked that I can remember, well, there was one on a compilation album I remember. I don't even think I have that anymore. Some record company compilation that might even been a cassette or something had this really great song, and I forgot. But then wasn't it the first album that had the song Feed the Tree?
Yeah,
that was just a super catchy 90s song, you know.
Right.
This album doesn't really have anything really of that kind of vibe, right? It's not as it has a little more of the I don't know if I'd say folk, but not quite as alternative, maybe, right? If they're from whatever that term derived from back in the 90s. But definitely some good, catchy songs.
Yeah, and also listening back to the earlier albums, you know, there's something completely unique about the song construction that they had back then. I mean, the lyrics and just the whole song, they're not constructed like other people's songs. They sort of they jump right into something that is hard to make sense of lyrically, and they just go from there. You know, I mean, you pick any Belly song from that period and tell me what it's about. It's it's really difficult. They're very obscure. And at the same time, I feel like they're totally in touch with what's going on in 2018. I mean, they could, any one of those songs, they're very, you know, they're women singing a very, you know, empowering, fierce, almost like just don't fuck with me kind of attitude.
Yeah.
In all their songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's so contemporary.
Right.
Now this album's a little more mellower than that. So in a sense, I think they were more in touch with what's going on right now in 95 than they are today. But those songs are amazing. These songs are put together in a more kind of conventional storytelling way. Like you can actually say, oh, yeah, I think I understand what this song is about. I understand what they're trying to say here.
Yeah.
You can't say that about the earlier songs. They're just completely wild and on their own.
Yeah, and that might be from, you know, where she was coming from Throwing Muses, because they were really that way, I think. You know, mm-hmm. musically, mm-hmm. it was very unpredictable. And again, like, I didn't really know what the songs were about. But that doesn't really, that's not new for me. But
right.
Yeah, okay, I'll make a pick. I like track 6, Girl.
She wakes up and waves the night away, opens the blinds and lights the sky. The sun itself shields its eyes, saying, where is that light coming from? She opens her mouth and sings the first song of the day. The birds of the air singing, where is that sound coming from? Where is that coming from? First kick of the day, it's in the net. Back healing and away. The field is all yours today. Look up, look up, look up. Where is that light coming from? Where is that coming from? She brings it, she brings it. The day, the sun, the light. She brings it all, and the time has come for her song to be sung. And she sings it, she sings it. She wakes up.
That's Belly, 2018 Belly. The album is called
Indeed.
Dove.
That sounded in many ways like an old Belly song, but so much more mellow.
Right. Yeah. They're embracing their aging rocker status. You know, some aging rockers like to say, hey, I can still rock. I'm going to play something kind of, you know, rough and rocking. And other people are kind of, well, they're just a little mellower than they were. And they play that way, and that's fine, too. As long as it's good.
Yeah.
Which we've...
Absolutely.
As long as it's good by our evaluation. That's what matters. So, we should play one more track. Do you have one?
Human Child?
Yeah. That would have been my next pick, too.
Tight to our chest, sip it on light. together with your back to the sun. Oh, human child, you're digging up bones and miss all the fun. I'm not here to say bones and miss all the fun.
There you go, Belly.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
Yep. So, all you aging rockers out there, like us, check them out. Well, are we ready for our that's bonus right. band? I've got a bonus band.
I'm ready.
It's a bonus artist. Clint Michigan. That's kind of a catchy name, right?
It is.
His name is actually Clint Assay, and he's a New Yorker. I can't recall if it's New York City or somewhere in New York State, but... probably one of your neighbors, I would imagine.
Probably. I mean, you know, it's Clint Michigan is catchy. The problem is these days it does remind you, I think it was intended to remind you of Flint, Michigan.
Yes.
But these days that just reminds you of environmental disaster, yep. So that's not a good thing. But, you know, eventually I think that will recede and we'll be back to
right.
whatever that means to people in general, which is also yeah. kind of a depressing thought.
Yeah, thinking about contaminated water isn't really the most pleasant thing, is it?
Right. But I mean, yeah. It's not like Flint was known to be a vibrant place before that.
Not since the auto industry left, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So he's got some friends who are, influential music people. There are a few guests that play on this album. One is Jennifer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Jennifer O'Connor. Are you familiar with her? We've talked
no.
about her on the podcast. She's another really good kind of folk rocker kind of person from the New York mm-hmm. area. So, so this is kind of it is a bit of a downer album, I have to say. But I think he's a good songwriter, and it's kind of like a downer version of Bon Iver. That was a comparison I came up with.
Well, when I first... listen to the first track, I can't remember which one it was. My first thought was, I'm being punked. Sufjan Stevens has a side project that I didn't know anything about, and he's recording under the name of Clint Michigan. But the more I listened, you're right, the more I thought, no, it's not really Sufjan so much. It's a little bit of Iron and Wine.
Right, yep.
It's a little bit of Bon Iver.
Right.
It's kind of all three of them.
That's
you
right.
have the hushed singing of Sufjan, and you have kind of the sound of Bon Iver, and yeah, I mean it's all in that area.
Yep, the album is called Centuries. So let's start with number two, called Beg for It.
I'll try in the morning again. She just wants nothing else to do with it. Tackled by an ocean, looking for some gentleman's slow motion. It's the same old ball and chain, and the ways we never change.
Clint, Michigan. I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
I did some music journalism. Also on this album are members of The Moldy Peaches and Julie Ruin. So those are bands I've heard of. Julie Ruin has that famous indie rocker. I forgot her name.
Yes. Her original band was back in the 90s. And what was it?
Bikini Kill, maybe? No, that's probably wrong.
I think it...
Something like that.
Yeah, might have been Bikini Kill. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've heard of the Moldy Peaches, but I don't remember what or who they are. Anyway, yeah, Clint, Michigan. Yeah, and I definitely heard the Sufjan Stevens there after you mentioned it. Totally. You know, it's...
And also that guitar was definitely Iron and Wine. I mean, that is their guitar sound right there.
Yeah. So, do you have a pick to make from this album?
Yeah, there were a couple that I like. Stephen Says.
All right, that's track 3.
Stephen insists this life
Clint, Michigan.
That one is very nice. Now, if we could put together a concept album in which included only songs with that as their something like that as their title, we could have, you know, Lisa Says, Caroline Says, Stephen Says, Stephanie Says. I mean, there's a million of them. Are there not?
Wow, how did you come up
starting,
with all those? That was
with
amazing.
Underground, but I think there are others.
I just searched my library. Let's see. Yeah, I've got... That's pretty funny. I love it when your music library is like a spreadsheet, right? So you can just search. So, well, there was Jane Says by Jane's Addiction.
Of course, which, Jane Says, yes.
There's a Danny Says by Tom Waits. Simon Says by Marnie Stern. Xavier Says by the Magnetic Fields. Someone Says by Editors. Scotty Says by Courtney Barnett. So those are my Says. That's my Says collection.
Right.
America Says Hello by The Chills. There. That, the nod goes to Craig for that one.
Yeah.
That was a classic.
I don't know if that makes it on this particular album, though.
No.
Because we still have to make room for Velvet Underground, Lisa Says. And I think there's actually more than one Velvet Underground song that isn't there.
God, I don't know.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be giving up our ideas like this. Now it's going to be like some big corporate podcast is going to steal our idea. Of course, then we'll sue him and get a few more $1 million in the coffers. So, all right, let's play one more from the Clint Michigan album. The album is called Centuries. I'm going to play the most piano-based song because it's a little different. It's called The Way Out. That's Clint Michigan.
Yes.
So I think it.
That was very Sufjan.
Yep. I think it. And this is again, I guess something that Sufjan Stevens does too. But and Iron and Wine and who else did we compare them to?
Bon Iver.
So you know the commonality, I guess, would be that you take a like a sad folk song, there's got to be a little sad in there, and embellish it with a lot of instrumentation, and it can be very effective. So I think they do that well on this album. Clint Michigan.
Yes.
Yeah. So, there you go. That's the show. Time to sign off. We have given them $0 worth at this point, don't you think?
Definitely. Way beyond $0.
Right.
Just with our special features before we even got to the main event.
Right. I mean, we were above zero so quickly on this one that, we're just coasting the rest of the way, basically.
And we have brought it in under 2 hours, so that's a good thing.
Right.
Because I was afraid we would hit that mark. But we're not even close.
You know what'd be cool if we did if we got every one of us on at the same time on like a end of year podcast, you know, like 7 people or 8 people. It would be completely out of control because we wouldn't be able to regulate, you know, like people wouldn't hear each other and be talking over each other. It'd be just a complete disaster, I think. But it's a fun concept.
Right. Or if everyone were totally polite, then it would take 8 hours. So one or the other, either total confusion or it would go on for 8 hours.
Of course, what we would need to do is probably have a professional director in a professional studio. We could all come to New York City and do it at like the the Panoply Network studios or something like that, right?
Right, right. Professional broadcasting.
Right. Now, you know how people, like the real professional podcasters, they record conversations on Skype and there's like a different file for each person's audio? Have you ever heard how they do that?
No.
Yeah, so they could have like, you know, four people, but they're individually recording their own audio, and then somehow then the files then get separately recorded but then mixed together and like synced. And I can't even imagine like how you would even do that. But apparently that helps to minimize noise because you don't get all the background from everybody else having everybody else's noise in the background or whatever. You only get like the purest recording. But my setup is it's pretty rudimentary, but it's right. Like once I got it so that it worked, I don't touch it because I'm afraid it'll that's why right. Like we were talking about the technical issues we were having like with my cheap mixer here. I would like to get a mixer that is actually better quality, but I have to make sure that I can connect it exactly the same way as I connect this one or it might not work.
Right.
So like I still don't even understand how I can play the music from my computer and everybody else can hear it and there's no feedback or anything. So I don't know. Somehow it works.
But you're saying that there are podcasters who are so professional that they can record people in different places with their separate audio files, yet they don't have the budget to actually bring those people into the same physical space?
Apparently, yeah. They don't fly the people in or anything. Yeah.
You'd think that would be the easiest way to, plus you get, the human contact and the interplay.
Right. Well, that's what we should be doing on this podcast. Like an airline ticket should just be delivered by courier to your house, and then you arrive at Fourth Bedroom Studios at exactly the time that we're recording, right? That's how it should work.
Right, right. That's unless we're recording it in the UK or Australia or somewhere. Then we would all fly.
Right. Yeah, well, if we had our own jet, then we could just, pick you up on the way to the UK and then continue on to Australia to record in Melbourne. Another thing to work on, right?
Definitely.
All right, well,
next year.
Thank you for once again participating. Basically, you've saved the podcast, so I think this basically justifies bringing you up to the major leagues, because that's what's supposed to happen, right? When you get called up to the majors, then you have to be ready to basically pinch hit and hit a home run. Not pinch hit and strike out. Pinch hit and hit a home run. So basically, that's what you're doing. So we have justified the call up.
Right. You've justified the expense of having to authorize all of my spending and travel and entertainment expenses and all that other stuff that you're right. subsidizing so generously.
Yeah. Well, there's a big difference between a minor league and a major league salary. We had to consider that.
Right, right. And you have to stay under the cap, which, right. is not always easy, right?
Yeah, we get pretty close to
the cap.
When
you're paying somebody as much as you're paying me, that can be a real issue.
Well, that's why we've been talking about the concern that Chris might have to be released because to make cap room. So, I don't know.
Well, sometimes, your veterans, they have to find a better fit somewhere else. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I mean, his salary is just swelling. It's getting to the point where, I just don't know. Can we designate him a franchise player or something? I don't know.
You really have to avoid those multi-year contracts, where you pay somebody millions and you're not, but really you're not sure that they aren't past their peak.
Right, right.
A lot of teams, have struggled with that.
I know, like the Yankees do. It's like, so when we decided to pay $147 million for a 10-year contract for Chris. I mean, we couldn't forecast like that year 8, he'd only be on the podcast 4 times in a year, So yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. All right. Time to sign off.
Never going
to
get in the World Series at this rate.
No, there's a little bit of management crackdown we're going to have. So, all right. I guess we'll sign off and more releases are flowing into the indie rock sphere, right? A lot of fun stuff coming up.
Oh yeah!
So looking forward to a whole bunch of them. Plus, there'll
be
some
more live reports too.
Oh right, yep, yeah. So just all kinds of great stuff. So, all right, thanks everybody. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter at Will's Band. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.